What's up, fungal associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and as always, I'm here with Mr. Casey Clapp. Hi, Case.
Good day, Alex.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm just doing wonderfully. You showed me this the other day. List of trees and shrubs by taxonomic family.
Oh,
on
yes.
Wikipedia.
That's right.
And wouldn't you know it, I didn't know this list existed.
This shocked me.
Shocks me too, Alex.
I thought this was just a thing that you might know off the top of your head.
Not even close.
Yeah.
It's the longest scroll I think I've ever been able to do. It's so, so good.
More on that list coming up. I sent it to you for a particular reason.
Yes, that is true.
For a tiny little project that's coming up. On April 19th, you and I, Casey Clapp and Alex Croson, will be joining Tobin Mitnick,
the Jew who loves trees.
That's right. At Powell's Books on Burnside here in Portland.
It's a city of books.
Oh, that's what that location's called?
Yeah, it's Powell's City of Books.
City of Books.
It's an entire block. It's the largest independent bookstore in the nation.
Wow. We're going to be there for his book launch, his new book, Must Love Trees, An Unconventional Guide.
You should certainly get it. It's hilarious.
Yes. It's very weird and good. Just the way we like him.
Just the way we like him.
And we'll be there, and we're going to talk about the book and sort of maybe, I'm stumbling over my words because I don't really know what we're going to be talking about, but it should be a fine conversation. Come and hang out and say hi to us. And
it will be a lot of fun.
Get a picture of Tobin with us in the background.
Oh, please. Yeah, that'd be great. whose event is this again? It's our event, Tobin. Get out of here. Yeah, that's. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. So if you're in Portland around that time, come and hang out and say hi and buy Tobin's new book.
Yeah. And if you are around the city of Los Angeles the following weekend,
wow,
even more fun is happening, although this one is going to be a little bit more involved.
You're telling me. Casey and I will be co-producing and co-hosting this year's Treemy Awards.
Right. The Treemy is second annual, the only awards show for trees and popular culture media, including the internet.
That's right. It's going to be
a hoot.
Yes.
It's going to be a hoot.
I'm a little stressed. I think that's to be expected. It's a big event. And if you're in LA that weekend, the 20th, Earth Day.
It is Earth Day. Heck, if you're not in LA, get on a plane and go buy a ticket and come join us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Come see us, buy a ticket online. All this shit can be found on our Instagram bio.
Yeah.
At Arbitrary Pod, and you can find all of these things. And Casey, we have one more announcement.
One more.
Before we get into this week's tree, that is a new piece of merch, Completely Arbitrary, the poster.
Bah, bah, bah.
It is for sale right now on our merch store, arbitrary.com/merch. It is a 9x12 poster that you can put on your wall.
That's correct. You can put it in a frame.
In a frame, certainly. And then put that frame on your wall.
Yes, you could put it in a frame that has a back stop, so you can set it on a desk.
Oh, yeah.
You can post it on the ceiling,
mm-hmm,
so that when you lay down, you can imagine, you can look at it and be like, huh.
You're making love with your partner. You can look up at Casey and I.
Exactly. And trust us, we'll be looking right back at you. Just kidding. The poster is of us looking at a golden cone.
Yes.
So our gaze is averted, you pervert.
A golden cone, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
I
think that's it. Those are all the new things that are going on. So go check out Powell's Bookstore on the 19th. Come see us. Come say hi to Tobin. If you are interested and really want to go see a really fun event live, go vote for the Treemies. You can find that in the link in our bio.
Yep.
Wherever you find us, you'll find links for these things. And then show up and have a great time with us. It's going to be a lovely production.
Yeah. It's going to be weird.
Yeah. And then make sure at the end of all this, support us by buying a poster.
It's a great poster. Art by Bonnie Dutch, designed by me. Printing by Fireball in Philadelphia, PA.
There you go. We got it all.
City of Industry. Casey.
Speaking of industry.
This week, we are talking about a very industrious tree. One which grows very interesting fruit. That's right. We are talking Noni.
The Noni.
Yes, last week we were talking all about knees. This week, no knees.
No knees. Thank you. In fact, did we do that on purpose? You bet your ass we did.
Yeah, we totally did. This thing's also called the Indian mulberry. It's also called a couple other things. Casey, I believe you have a list of alt names for the Noni.
This is the fun thing that we get to do. Every now and then there's like a really well done like information sheet about some species.
Yeah.
And especially the ones that are have a huge distribution like this tree. Whatever culture it is growing in has its own name.
Taxonomy, yeah, folks.
Exactly, or just a different language, you know. So it could be a little bit of both, I suppose.
Sure.
So there is the canary wood in Australia, in Corsray, which I don't know what country. It's just the language.
Okay.
It's just the letter I.
Very cool.
I don't know if it's I E A, something like that. Other names include Indian mulberry in English, Lada in Guam in Northern Marianas, Mengelwag in Yap. Kasingal Lel Nigla.
This is my favorite segment we've ever done.
Let's see. Kara in Fiji. No-No in the Cook Islands in Tahiti.
Oh, no.
Non in Kiribati. There's a lot of fun names, is I guess what we're saying here.
For the purposes of this episode, we are calling it the Noni.
Weepwool.
Okay. One more.
Nen. I love these. These are
all got a lot of names.
Yeah, it's got a lot of names. Yeah, and this is so we'll tell you more, but it grows all over the Pacific Islands and in Southeast Asia. So if you are anywhere in those tropical zones, you and your people probably got a name for it.
That's right.
So choose your own name adventure here.
so here's why we chose this tree. A few weeks ago, I was mindlessly scrolling through Instagram reels to numb the pain of existence, as we all do. And I came across a video of a guy on a beach, and he was holding this fruit, and he said, "This is the Noni." Mm. And he's going to eat it for us. This is what is on the internet.
This is what the internet is for.
This is content, I guess. So he bites into this fruit and he's like, "Oh, it's delicious." It's called, sometimes called the blue cheese fruit. It's sometimes called the vomit fruit. So I was very interested in this fruit. I started looking it up and it came to see that apparently the fruit tastes a little funky, Case. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot of people say it tastes like blue cheese. A lot of other people say it tastes like barf. Apparently it numbs your mouth while you're eating it. There's all kinds of interesting facets of this Noni fruit.
Yeah.
And I got really curious and I said, "Casey, please research this for me and let's talk about it on an episode." And you're listening to that episode now.
Oh my God.
And we've got plenty more to say about the Noni fruit right after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking Noni, aka many other things. We're not going through the list again.
No, we're not going to do that again. We've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Go back. We also call it the Indian mulberry tree.
Yes. Let's imagine, Casey, as we do every episode, that you and I, you know what I really love? You and I walking through a little forested area, like a forest.
Yeah.
Like a little treed area.
Okay, there's just like some trees here, there. Not too big, not too small.
In Hawaii.
Yes, okay.
And we'll talk about this tree's relationship with Hawaii.
Yes, we will.
Casey.
Alex.
Let's ID this tree.
Let's do it. So, you're walking in Hawaii. Scratch that. You're walking in Guam. You're walking in the Marshall. Walking in Australia. You're in southern India.
Okay, this is performance art, folks.
Wait, no, okay. You're on the Pacific coast in Central California and Mexico.
I'll explain what Casey's doing here for the art lovers. What Casey's saying is this thing grows all over the place.
It does. It grows. Thank you, Alex. I'm being a pill. No, it is. This tree grows everywhere. You could be in Hawaii the way you set us up.
Yes,
you
please.
You could be in any other island in Polynesia, in Indonesia, from Southeast Asia all the way down to Australia natively, or now pantropical Earth.
Yeah.
Which I love saying. Like, where does this grow? Oh, it's pantropical.
Was that just mean like a belt around the earth?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It grows pretty much anywhere that it has been taken. It has grown naturally and is within the kind of tropics, basically between, what is the Tropic of Capricorn, the Tropic of Cancer, all the way to the equator. The closer you get to the equator, the higher up it grows. So it grows probably around 1,500 feet at the highest elevation, generally speaking.
Okay.
Other than that, it usually grows in kind of disturbed forests, grows in every kind of soil you can imagine.
Wow.
Acid soil, alkaline soil, limestone, basalt. It grows in sand. It grows in every possible situation, covered in rainwater all the time, in really droughty conditions all the time. You name it, this tree is just, it just is fine. It just does fine.
Casey, I'm reminded, because I was recently thinking about this tree.
Uh-huh.
Of the European hornbeam.
Ah, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how you just can kind of plant it and it'll grow.
It just kind of does its thing. Yeah. That I think that is, it's kind of fair, though I think the noni is even better.
Like, wow.
Not better necessarily in terms of like how good it does and the good that it does in a certain situation, but it is, I think, and I think I can say this, the most uniquely adaptable tree we've ever covered.
Wow.
Like, it grows sometimes as a shrub, sometimes as a liana, like those woody vines that you find in tropical places.
Okay.
Sometimes as a standalone single stem tree that grows up to about 30 feet or so, with about 20 foot or so wide canopy. It becomes, the canopy is very globose, like it's very much a big circle globe of a tree.
Interesting.
With these really intensely dark leaves, like kind of like way darker than you'd ever imagine. They're in the coffee family, so they look just like this coffee plant directly to my left.
Yes.
Oppositely arranged leaves, really dark and glossy canopy all around.
Wow.
But it grows everywhere. Like, and it's so strange. It's native to this one certain area, right? In Southeast Asia, from Indonesia down to Australia.
Okay.
But it now grows everywhere. The Polynesians took it with them as they migrated to all these other islands.
Yeah.
So it started to grow and is at this point considered native to a bunch of other kind of Polynesian islands. And when I say considered native, just put a pin in that for a future episode. Okay. We're going to get into that some other time. But the idea is that because these kind of people brought it along with their migrations, they just brought it to a new habitat and it started to grow. When globalization really kicked off, it went to every other place and now it starts to grow. But because it has these traits, Alex, that we're going to talk about, no one really sees it, so far as I can tell, as like an invasive species. It's naturalized a little bit, but they don't look at it the way we look at a tree of heaven.
It's just like a respectful world traveler.
I guess so, yeah. And I've not read that it like takes over forests or does anything that everyone's like, oh, that tree is doing that again.
Right.
I don't know exactly its relationship on the ground in all these places.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Casey, let's talk about some of the characteristics of the noni.
Yeah.
Let's start with the bark, if you please.
This is like a nice tan gray bark. It doesn't get very thick. It doesn't do a whole lot in terms of like exfoliating or ridges or anything like that. It just kind of grows up and becomes kind of a tannish brown color.
A little utility bark?
It's a little bit utility bark, but I think interestingly, it's kind of a tannish brownish utility bark. And for some reason, Alex, whenever I think of utility bark, I think gray.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think
That's interesting.
But I don't know, do you have like a color that comes to your mind when
I don't think of necessarily a color. I think of like a thickness often.
Yeah,
I think of utility bark as like kind of just like thin shitty bark.
Yeah.
That just is there cuz it needs bark.
Yeah, it's just like this is my job.
Yeah, so whether it's even, you know, brown, like pine bark that's brown and chippy.
Yeah.
If it's like really thin and shitty, I'm like, yeah, it's utility bark.
Okay, yeah. This is certainly utility bark though.
But this is interesting to know that when you think utility bark, you think gray.
I do. This is kind of like utility bark to me, but like halfway through The Wizard of Oz, when everything kind of comes in color and you're like, oh God, I Did not expect that to be that color.
I see.
That's where I'm at.
Interesting.
Yeah, there you go. A little welcome to my mind.
A little great cinematic analogy, Case.
Thank you, Alex.
I really feel, I really appreciate that.
Yes.
Makes me want to watch Wizard of Oz.
I only want to watch it when they actually end up in Neverland or wherever the hell they go.
Right, Neverland.
Anyway, let's talk about the leaves, Alex.
Yeah, these leaves, you said they're like coffee leaves.
They are.
Very dark, shiny.
Yep. They're in the coffee family.
Okay.
So that's Rubiaceae. And so coffee is oppositely arranged with these pinnately, not even lobed, just pinnately veined leaves.
Yeah.
And they are just like a stunning size and like sharpness. So I imagine that they look like less intense, not as waxy, not quite as tough magnolia leaves, southern magnolia, kind of like really big, very dark and glossy, like really stand out. That's how I see these leaves, though they're not quite as leathery as that. So they're kind of far more tropical, so they don't need to put on all these intense kind of protections like the southern magnolia would.
Okay.
But they have that same size and kind of appearance on the top. 6 to 20 inches long. They're huge. They get
20
big.
Inches?
20 inches. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they get there. They do
wow.
it.
Wow.
Like, honestly, this tree's consistently a surprise.
Wow.
Like, every time I say something, I'm like, what?
Very interesting, Case.
Yes. Now, the creme de la creme, what we really want to talk about
is... Yeah, let's cut all the bullshit.
Yeah, let's just talk about the flowers and the fruit here.
Yes.
So, small white flowers in clusters. Their clusters are usually 75 to 90 flowers per, like, flower bit kind of at the top of a stem.
Is that considered a panicle?
Not in this case, because a panicle would be an inflorescence. Now, an inflorescence is like a group of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
This would be an inflorescence, but a panicle is more strict, I guess is the best way to put it, where it has a single flower coming out often that is on a stem coming off of another stem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all kind of this branched form, but there's single flowers at the end with space in between. This, all the flowers are mashed together all on top of one another.
And that's one flower.
Yes. And so I looked, they just call it a head. They call it like a flower head.
Sure. Okay.
So I don't think it quite technically meets the definition of a panicle, because a panicle is very ordered and structured.
I gotcha. Yeah. Can I propose a more, speaking of folk taxonomy?
Please.
Can we maybe try calling it a bouquet?
Oh.
Or how about this? A bouquet.
A bouquet, a tiny bouquet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we might as well. There's a bouquet of 75, I'm sorry, a bouquet.
Yes.
75 to 90 individual little flowers.
Love it.
Sounds great. So all the flowers, they're little white things, and they are tubes. So their base is all fused together of the petals, and then they kind of pop out with the edge of their petals that splits into five individuals at the very top.
You were talking about this, and I thought I understood what you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
I thought I could picture it in my head.
You mean the flower head?
Yes. And then I Googled it. This is not even close to what I was imagining.
Okay, good. So I want the rest of everyone out there, they also are like, yeah, whoa, yeah, yes. Whatever Alex is imagining, that's where I'm at.
I want everybody who is even mildly curious about this to Google Noni tree flowers.
It's just a mishmash.
It's so interesting. And the very first thing that came to my mind was that it looks like it would be, you know, in Mario games, there's like the characters, you know, Mario, Luigi, Peach, Bowser.
Uh-huh.
But then there's like all these races of like little creatures, like the Goombas, you know, and little turtles that throw hammers, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like all these different little races. Every world you go to in Mario has its own sort of like native race.
Okay.
These look like... they would be a native race in Mario. That's the best I can describe it. They look so Nintendo-like to me.
Yeah, all right. That's
they're like
fair.
Bulbous, and like that, they'll have like a green little ball, then like one flower that's like ripe sticking out of it.
Yeah, they kind
of
look fake, right?
Yes, yeah. And it just has a lot of character, I think, is
that's,
what I'm...
That's very fair.
Yeah.
It's the polite term, you know? Yeah, they got a lot of it's got a lot of character, this house.
His new girlfriend has a lot of character.
Yeah, and it was like, ooh.
I mean, she has purple hair and a nose piercing.
Yeah, there you go. So for those of you who have purple hair and nose piercings, you are our favorite characters.
I was playing a stuffy conservative parent character there.
And scene. Welcome back, everyone, to Completely Arbitrary.
No more of that. Well, Casey, yes, and these flowers, of course... lead to fruit.
They lead to fruit,
which
Alex.
Is kind of the reason we're here.
It is the whole reason, the raison d'être.
Yes, Casey, let's talk about this noni fruit.
It is a fruit to be reckoned with. Let me tell you, it is. It's a many-seeded oval fruit is the best way to describe it.
Great,
and we would call it an aggregate of fruit. I'm sorry. And we would call it a multiple of fruit. What language are we in again, Alex?
A multiple?
Yeah, a multiple fruit.
What?
Yeah, I've got him right where I want him. So here's the thing, Alex. If we're speaking in, let's say, English,
okay,
we would call this a multiple fruit.
Really?
And a multiple fruit is a kind of fruit that is defined by having many different flowers, and each one has its own ovary, and then each one of those individual flowers is pollinated, and then as the ovary, which a fruit is technically defined as a mature ovary,
mm-hmm.
that fruit will then mature and fuse with all the other fruits around it. So technically speaking, this is a multiple fruit because each one of these flowers has one ovary. When they're fertilized, they all grow up together, mash and fuse, and then become one big fruit made up of a bunch of little fruits.
To give somebody some context here, another multiple fruit would be like a blackberry.
Wrong.
To give people some context here, another multiple fruit might be a raspberry.
Wrong.
Those are aggregates.
I'm so happy you said that, Alex. Yes, those are aggregate fruit.
Well, what the hell is the difference, Case?
The difference being there is one single flower connected to multiple ovaries. Each one of those ovaries becomes an individual fruit.
On aggregates.
That's all aggregated together, yes.
This is multiple flowers with multiple ovaries.
Correct, which makes it a multiple fruit. Remember how I confused you earlier distinctly?
Yes.
And how if this was the editing room floor, you'd been like, oh, Casey got that wrong and went back in time and got rid of that.
I didn't love that.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I apologize deeply. But do you know who you have to blame for this?
David Douglas.
You David!
I'm glad you died in that pit trap.
You bastard. No, unfortunately not. David Douglas we are not glad he died in that pit
My
trap.
My apologies to the David Douglas estate.
Yeah, we rescind that comment. The podcast regrets the error. No, but you can dislike and be a little bit upset to a guy named John Lindley.
John Lindley.
Yes, John Lindley. He's an Englishman. Now, apparently, he was actually pretty good at what he does. He was like, by 21, he was in the Linnaean Society.
Mm.
So like, this is the fancy English kind of society or like European society of botanists and things.
Okay.
But usually, you have to be like really good to get like put up to that level.
Is it kind of like the Royal Society?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay. In fact, I'm not even sure if they're different. They might all be like kind of just different chapters of the same thing.
I gotcha.
So he had done this and he was very good at what he did. But at some point, he actually got the definition wrong and either mistranslated it or did something.
Wow.
And switched the definition for multiple and aggregate.
Wow.
So, Alex, I'm so frustrated to tell you. In English, the things that we've just described are multiple fruit, which is multiple flowers, multiple ovaries, one big fruit.
Yes.
Aggregate fruit is one flower, multiple ovaries, and a big grouping of the fruit in one big fruit.
Noni and blackberry, respectively.
Yes. If we are speaking any other language, it's exactly opposite.
Interesting.
Because he wrote this and people cited it for the next 200 years. And people are like, wait, no, but that's this kind of fruit. No, that's that kind of fruit. And it turns out that, yes, we're both speaking different things because one guy just got them wrong. I found that out so late in my research game that I messaged you this morning and I was like, give me 20 more minutes.
Yes.
I have to read about this.
This is what that was?
This is what this was.
Wow.
Yes. So it's confusing as hell. In every way.
I thought you just had to get a car wash or something.
Yeah, so that's what I do in the mornings. I usually go get my car washed.
That is very interesting.
Isn't
so
that funny?
Because of one little mistranslation
yes,
by one person in one language.
Exactly.
it has redefined the terms in perpetuity.
Yes.
For everybody, every scientist who speaks English.
Yes. Or, and now there's like, there are people like a guy in the 80s, I think, in this, an article that I found, basically was like, we should go back to precedence and we should use the first definition that someone gave to this and just start over from there.
Okay.
But now, like, even if you look this up on Wikipedia, Wikipedia will give you the definitions and say, now, in all the other languages in the world, it's exactly opposite. So there you go again, English. Well done.
Wow.
Okay. I don't think they technically say, there you go, English. Well done in the Wikipedia article, but man, I mean, I can edit that, right?
I think Wikipedia frowns upon that sort of flavor text.
They do. What a bunch of squares. Okay, so the last bit, I should say, is that the fruit, there's also other kinds of fruit out there. And once that fruit comes together, it's an infructescence. So inflorescence, all the flowers.
Oh, wow.
Infructescence is all the is the fruit.
What is an example of that?
Elderberries. You familiar with elderberries?
Yeah.
That would be the whole thing together. It'd be the infructescence. Anyway, it gets complicated. But in order to just kind of make sure that we're going to gloss by this, just enough to have everyone be like, wait, what did they talk about?
Yes.
You also have a simple fruit.
Oh my gosh.
And a simple fruit is just one thing. So a blueberry would be a simple fruit. Like there's not multiple flowers. There's not multiple ovaries. It's just kind of all right there.
Can
right?
I propose another simple fruit? I mean, like this one's kind of obvious, like a peach.
Yes. Yeah.
Is,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm getting. I want to back up just a touch, Case.
Ooh. Yeah.
I know this isn't really what we planned on talking about specifically for this long.
Okay.
But you have simple fruits.
Yeah.
But you also have like droops and pomes, right? But those droops, a droop and a pome is more of a, like botanical definition.
Yes.
And a simple fruit is more like a categorical definition.
Alex, I'm so glad you brought this up. Yes, because simple and aggregate and multiple are kind of that larger term, like what you're describing, for then other kinds of things. So a simple fruit is that broad category. Perfectly said.
Yes.
And then inside of that category are the droops and the pomes and the follicles and the grain and that kind of thing.
Okay, okay.
Exactly. But that same idea translates to these other kinds of fruits.
Mm.
So an aggregate fruit can have many drooplets in it, such as the raspberry. It can be also an achene. An achene is where the base structure, the receptacle of the flower, which is what holds it onto the stem, that gets really big and becomes fleshy. And then all of the seeds on the outside are just chilling there.
Strawberry
is the example. It's the classic one.
Yeah.
Then you also have follicles. An aggregate of follicles is a magnolia, where there's an individual follicle that is the fruit, but they're all mashed together to create that big thing that we call the fruit of a magnolia.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is all on the Wikipedia because they have a nice little list that's very clean and clear, and we made sure to give our donation this year.
Gosh.
And then a samara. Of course, we had the double samara of maples.
Yes.
Single samara of ashes.
Samara is just a... It's samara is sort of like a minimalist...
It is,
approach to fruit.
Right? It's just there's one wing that kind of comes off the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And it's just like a thin papery covering over the seed and a little wing to give it some flight potential in the wind. But it's a utility fruit.
It's a utility fruit. And none more than the tulip poplar that has an aggregate of samaras all mashed up in the very middle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they can fall apart piece by piece. So it's very complicated, and there's drooplets, and there's achenes, and there's follicles, and then you can describe how they're set up, so they could have a panicle or a raceme or a spike, and then all of this has to do also with how the flowers are set up to begin with.
Yeah. I guess the flower kind of defines the fruit in a lot of ways, right?
It does, Case? In a lot of ways, yeah. And then how that flower then dies and develops and the rest of it develops is what creates a different thing. So we haven't even talked about accessory fruits. And an accessory fruit is a completely different thing, but that is where some other part of the non-ovary part of the plant then becomes a part of the fruit. That's a pome, where it's actually this base, which a completely different section of the whole plant the ovary itself is just the core of the apple that right. doesn't taste very good.
So the a pome is like a fruit that grows around
the ovary
yes. instead of like out of the ovary.
Correct.
Like the ovary doesn't turn into a pome.
Yeah.
The pome grows around the ovary.
Yes. I think that's as good as we can get. Yes. And then
a floral botanist.
Yeah. Someone else there is just screaming because they have this all figured out. Others are probably screaming because they're like, what are they saying? I'm so confused right now. But I have to admit, a part of me made that happen all on purpose.
Well, you know, we often fight a war on two fronts here, Casey, which is that we like to provide scientific information in an as approachable way as possible.
Yes.
For people who may not like be able to keep up with deep science talk.
Who's not going to be reading through all these things.
But we also like to appeal to the deep science talk people.
Yeah.
So we're sort of in this weird middle zone where we confuse the novices and piss off the experts.
And that is completely arbitrary, everyone.
Wow. That we gotta grab that for a poll quote.
Yeah, we definitely should. All right, so let me try, Alex, if I may. One quick roundup.
Go for it, Case.
So you have a flower. That flower has sexual parts that come from it. In those sexual parts are the things that have the ovary inside of them. Cones do not have this. So conifers are completely gone here.
Okay.
And so they're all the gymnosperms.
This is just angiosperms.
Correct. So a flower, the most basic one, will have a, we're talking perfect flowers, or flowers that have both sexual parts inside, just also for ease.
I.e. noni.
At the base of this flower is an ovary. An ovary is where the ovum is, the ovule. That's the thing that essentially is analogous to an egg, where pollen is analogous to sperm.
Yes.
So pollen gets in there, it fertilizes that ovule. That ovule then starts to mature inside the ovary. The ovary itself also goes through transformation and starts to mature, and then that is a fruit. We then try to tell things apart based on what that flower looks like, how it's set up, how many petals it has, are they fused, are they not fused, a thousand different things. Has this flower split into multiple different flowers? Are they all right next to each other? We use that. Then we use what the fruit looks like, so you can have the same flowers from the viewpoint of whoever's looking at them, and they could create two different kinds of fruits. A great example would be cherries and plums, or different kinds of maples, where they look basically the same. All the parts are there. This one might be a little bit different color, but then when they come out, the samaras are way different, right?
Okay, yeah.
So the fruit can be different than, even if the flowers are very, very similar.
Okay, so the flowers may look alike, the fruit may not.
Exactly, and that's how we can do species. Like, oh, all the flowers look exactly the same. These must all be maples.
That's a family or a genus.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the fruit starts to look different. They're like, oh, okay, so this one's going to be different because it's now has different fruit.
And is this just to interject really quick,
yeah.
Is this sort of like the type technique for figuring out the species of flowering plants?
A little bit. This is the very, very dumbed down version.
Oh.
This is the we're just writing a quick essay answer version.
I guess I just mean like, I guess IDing flowering plants,
yeah.
Like if these look really similar, then look to this.
Yes.
If these look really similar, then look to this. And now you see the difference.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
So those are the parts that we separate flowers and plants out by. That's how we decide what's taxonomically and cladistically related to each other.
Wow. What a great term.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Cladistically.
Cladistically.
Ooh, that's a great word to say. It feels so good on my teeth and tongue.
Okay, great. This is nice. So once you start to get the fruits, you have a simple fruit, an acorn. You have one flower, you have one seed, you have one fruit. It is a boom, boom, boom kind of thing.
I see.
Very simple, very simple.
Casey just winked.
Thank you. Then you have, we're going to use the old school terms,
okay.
The aggregate fruit, which is a compound fruit.
Okay.
So it's compound as opposed to simple. Compound means that it is one single flower, multiple ovaries.
Okay.
And then those ovaries all mature right next to each other, and they become one big giant fruit.
Another interjection?
Please, Alex.
I just want to, like, I don't want to blow past all the stuff that I don't totally understand, because I'll never remember my follow-up questions at the end of everything.
Please.
So you said a compound fruit.
Yes.
Is that just something that happens, like, in the DNA? A single flower growing multiple ovaries?
Mm.
Is that just sort of the way it grows?
You know, I'd be willing to bet that it probably has something to do with some weird genetic mutation that happened, you know?
Okay.
And, like, sometimes you get, like, twins, you know, because something happens and splits that I don't quite understand.
Sure.
I think it's something similar to that, where you essentially have something a long time ago ended up splitting some way somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know the evolution of it. We can see what it is now.
You're right.
But it's hard to go back and say, what exactly happened? We can tell you superficially, well, clearly this one flower developed multiple ovaries, or maybe there was multiple flowers that all, like, combined somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, we'd have to really go into some botany, like expertise, maybe not even botany.
Genetics?
Yeah. I mean, botany could tell us that, but I don't know if botany could necessarily say this evolved from this like this.
Yeah.
They could just say, here are the differences.
Evolutionary botany.
Yes. So there you go. We need an evolutionary botanist to come talk to us.
You know, if you can come up with a term for one of these scientists, they probably exist.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. That was too easy for us to come up with. So they're out there. We know they are.
For sure. So, okay. So maybe at some point it was like, we had a mutation and now we have two ovaries. Hey, we got twice the fruit. This seems like a pretty good deal for us.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is working out. Let's do this. Plant was successful.
Sure.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I think that's the easiest way to think about it without really having me saying something that's not accurate.
We want to ride that line.
Yeah, we want to ride that line just so we don't get too many emails.
So you've got simple fruit, you've got compound fruit.
Exactly. Otherwise called aggregate fruit.
Okay.
We also have our lovely multiple fruit, which is single flowers that have single ovaries that then come together.
Your noni.
Exactly. Now, what those create could be lots of different things. So, plane tree has multiple achenes right next to each other.
Hmm.
The mulberry, same exact thing, where the fruit, the big thing, is one big fruit, but each one comes from this. So, you can get individual drupes and nutlets and all these other, like, basic single not compound things that then you mash together and they become compound.
That was my next question.
There you go.
Can you make a compound fruit out of simple fruit parts?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yes. And a lot of times we call those, like, nutlets or something like that.
Oh.
Nutlets or drupelets or I guess half the time those are pretty much the only ones we use.
Okay.
But yes, there you go.
Interesting.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
And so that is the fruit that ends at something. And it's usually a thing nested in a thing, but it also gets complicated when you really try to, like, apply these broad things across a million different plants.
Yeah.
Where, like, where in this do we put orchids, for example?
Hmm.
Some orchids make vanilla beans. Other orchids make almost nothing, and the seeds are so small that it's like they don't even exist until they find some fungus and turn into something else.
Interesting.
So it's really difficult to put everything in a big category or big group of categories. However, I have my book here of technical terms.
However, we're going to try.
So you could read through here, Alex, and we could come up with all of the different things. Accessory, achene, droop, drooplet, hesperidium, follicle, aggregate, acorn, berry, burr, hip, legume, multiple, moment, caryopsis, capsule. I could go on.
You sound like David Byrne. I will say, Casey, I agree with you in that, like, you know, when we talk about trees, and I mean, like, capital T.
Yeah.
I can, like, hold my own.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm keeping up. I understand the terms. When you use kind of industry jargon, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, well done.
Fruit feels like such a different thing, like this entire different alien category that we start talking about fruit and fruit parts and delineations and categories.
Yeah.
And I really start to feel overwhelmed pretty quickly.
I can imagine.
It's like getting on a, it's like talking about fruit is like getting on like a theme park ride that you know within 2 seconds is too intense for you. But you're like, I have to sit here for another minute.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
I'll lose my mind.
I think it's very difficult to do if you can't see what's in front of you. So you're on this ride and you're like, I don't even know what to expect.
Yes.
And it's in the dark.
Totally.
So then it takes a twist and turn and you can't like see it coming and figure out where you came from.
Yeah.
And why you're going to where you are now.
I guess what I'm discovering is that it has taken me 2 years to become comfortable with trees.
Yeah. Okay.
Fruit, which are a totally normal part of most trees, is like, I don't even.
You're still like, stay away.
Yeah.
I don't need to deal with
it. It's like Casa Doom down there. Like I can't even go there.
Yeah. Very fair. Well, that is what kind of fruit are, and it's hard to say. Like, you can't even give like a good overview that is like family wide to like show how they all developed.
Yeah,
because some developed something, then lost them, then redeveloped it again, or did something completely different. So there's a lot of different evolutionary things. It is so confusing, and there's not a really good method for like laying it out, other than just memorizing the definition for a Samara. Memorize the definition for this. When you see one, you'll be like, I think that's going to be this.
I gotcha.
So that's kind of sad though, because I always like to have like some nice fashionable, like, let me lay it out and you can see it really clearly. That's always so nice. Fruit, Alex, you are in the majority, because it is really confusing. And we haven't even talked about the culinary side of these things, which is a whole other beast, Alex.
That's right, Case. A beast I'm a little more familiar with.
Exactly. Now, Alex, I think we should put a pin in the rest of this. What is a fruit? And we should just talk about what this fruit is.
Yeah, let's get back to the noni.
Let's get back to the noni. And you know what? To kind of like really tee it up, when you see a fruit, you know it. You know? whatever it is, you just know it.
Yeah.
Other times someone has to tell you, and that's okay too.
It's like, what is that that Supreme Justice or something, their definition of pornography is they don't know, but when they see it, they know it.
Oh yes, I did.
That's my definition of fruit.
Oh yeah, there you go. I don't know, but when I see it, I know it.
And then I eat it.
And then I eat that fruit.
So Casey, I am more familiar with the noni as a Hawaiian fruit.
Yes.
Not nationally, but you know, like
sure.
From that area.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Polynesians did bring it along, didn't they?
That's
brought it
right
through all of their different migrations.
As we know, the first people on the Hawaiian Islands were Polynesian settlers.
Yeah, or sailors at the minimum.
Sailors,
yeah.
Settlers has a different connotation, I think.
It kind of does. And they were doing more of a planned migration.
Migration.
Yeah, so they were extraordinarily adept at seafaring.
Yeah.
And basically said, hey, let's go explore / move. And that's what they did.
We can relate anything to trees.
Yeah, we sure can.
I would love to talk about the Polynesian migratory stuff at some
ooh,
point.
Ooh, all right. Yeah, let's see if we can do that. Let's pull it together.
That is a very mind-boggling thing.
It is amazing. The Polynesian triangle is what they call it. And you can look this up, and it's essentially Hawaii and New Zealand and Easter Island is the other. And right in the very middle is Tahiti.
There you go.
Yeah, so this is that kind of the big thing, and it's essentially this giant triangle of space that these sailors just went out and found islands in.
Now, when we say Polynesia,
yes,
that's like a general term for a group of islands, right?
Yes, all of which are different nations at this point.
Yes.
Or many of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's no place called Polynesia.
Yes, I think that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and they all came initially, if they really trace back the lineage, it actually is from the indigenous people of Taiwan initially started this kind of lineage of people who then became and are now today known as Polynesians.
A very interesting case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Polynesians in their triangle of migration ended up on Hawaii. So Casey, this is very interesting to me, and I hope to you too.
I bet you will be.
The noni, our subject today, is one of just 12 what are called canoe plants brought by Polynesians to the islands of Hawaii.
Oh my God.
They only brought 12 plants because they had limited space. They have a lot of people and supplies.
Yeah.
Now, and then they need to bring food and
gotcha.
Stuff.
Gotcha. So like, what define what is a canoe plant then?
As far as I know, a canoe plant is just one of the plants that were brought on the migration to
these yes.
different islands.
Okay. They're like, well, these are the plants that we put on our canoes when we go places.
You can extrapolate to say they were the plants that were most important to these people and their culture in terms of like medicine and food and shelter.
I see. Right? Okay. Yeah.
It's like we build our homes with this type of wood. Let's bring some of those trees so that when we get wherever we're going,
yeah.
we can build some homes.
Food, plants, and yes. other important things.
That's right.
Yeah. What are some other examples?
So some other examples might be the breadfruit, taro, bananas, bamboo.
Wow. Okay.
That's a good structural plant.
That is.
But how about this case? The noni was the only plant that was brought specifically for medicinal purposes.
For medicinal purposes. Yet they also would eat it too, I assume.
I would assume, yeah. yeah. Although, you know, if you grow up eating something
yeah.
that somebody else finds distasteful,
uh-huh.
you know.
That yeah. Oh, I see.
We can talk about the taste of the noni.
Yeah. I mean, I have read that it is considered by some to be starvation fruit. They only eat it if there's a famine going on. It's like the last resort.
Wow.
Which I kind of take with a grain of salt because there's also like stories of the Aborigines in Australia like eating insects and things on the ground.
Yeah.
So the colonist, like Banks, when he came over, he was like, oh, they must be starving and like can't sure. actually do this. They're eating ants. Those are starvation ants. So it's like, well, maybe you just thought it tasted horrible, so you assume these people only eat it then.
Yeah.
Other things got introduced and they chose all these other options. So I don't know. I bet you there's some truth to it, but also you don't take a plant that is like your last resort, you know, if there's other plants that you can take. So it makes
sure.
makes me think that this tree was brought, you know, everywhere, probably primarily, like you're saying, for these medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
But also, we can eat these big, grubby fruits, too. So we might as well just, that this is an all-around great plant.
Yeah, it's like a bonus, I think, that you can eat it.
There you go, yeah.
But it's mostly a medicinal plant.
Yeah, that's curious. So what do they use it for?
Well, Casey, I only panic when you set me up so well. I'm like,
Alex, just read the next paragraph.
Notably indigenous with the small amount of resources they brought with them across the ocean. So Casey, Polynesians used the entire noni plant in the same way that indigenous peoples from North America use the entire buffalo.
Is it a utility plant?
I guess you could say that, Case. Okay. But that's, okay. I don't know, we've come to call use utility as a bit of a derogatory term.
Yeah, I guess we have.
I don't want to go there with this guy.
Yeah, let's not.
We should call it the buffalo plant.
Ah.
It was the root of like 40 plus herbal remedies.
Wow.
This is one of those, you know, we talked about sassafras.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of like a cure-all, like use it for tooth pain, dysentery.
Yeah, yeah, the willow
fever.
As well.
Fever,
yeah.
Yes,
it
totally.
It just does it all. I gotcha.
You can find something on this plant that will cure what ails you, no
wow,
matter what.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So a big one, Case, out of all, you know, you can make a poultice with the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, like, and this is kind of true across most plants that are used for medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
You can, you know, grind up the roots and put it in teas. Gotcha. That's a big common one. A big one for the noni, the fruit juice itself, Case.
Yeah. Please tell me it stops vomiting.
It stops vomiting only in that it makes you vomit and eventually you have to stop.
Oh, that's so good.
It was used to treat what we like now know today as heart disease, diabetes, yeah. high blood pressure, menstrual cramps, indigestion, high cholesterol, respiratory ailments. It really covers all of your
yeah,
systems.
I do love the idea that like, I guess if it doesn't cause all these things, but like if you do eat one and you feel like vomiting,
yeah.
then they're like, oh, well, the cure for that is just a poultice from the leaves to help you stop vomiting from eating the fruit of the vomit tree. So they're actually eating the fruit and getting heartburn. So then they have to take a poultice
yes.
to get rid of the heartburn.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Casey, you can also take the unripe fruit, which is like this hard green ball.
Yeah, because it goes from green to white, right?
Yes.
Like yellow.
The ripe fruit is a trip. Really? And we should describe what it looks like specifically, because I don't know if we totally did.
Yes, I guess that's true, other than an aggregate.
Yeah. You take that unripe fruit, you grind it up, mash it up into a pulp, and you can mix it with salt. This can be applied to lesions. It can help with like broken bone pain.
Wow.
Poisonous bites, burns. And Casey, this part's my favorite.
Yeah.
Tea from the leaves. Mm-hmm. Very common for plants.
Yeah. It's like one of the most used methods of like getting medicine from plants.
It's like the first thing you think of.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Here's a list of a short list of what the tea from the leaves of this plant are meant to help.
Okay.
Or cure. Tuberculosis.
Oh my God.
The symptoms of cancer.
Wow.
Depression.
Okay.
And the aches of old age and arthritis.
Oh my God. It's a companion your whole life.
It really is. Oh wow. So a noni tree can produce up to 20 pounds of fruit a month, Casey.
I read that. It stunned me.
I don't even know what to compare that to. That's a lot, right?
Yeah, and it does this every single month over an entire year. I read that you could get up to like 500 pounds if you like are growing it commercially.
Wow.
Like really trying to maximize it.
Holy
shit. Because it will have flowers on the plant, on the same branch where the fruit is developing from older flowers. So you can see brand new flowers, young fruit, semi-mature, mature, over-mature, all at the same time.
So it's kind of in all cycles at all the time.
Yes, at 3 years old, it matures and starts to do this, and it never stops.
Wow.
It just keeps pumping out fruit year-round all the time.
That's incredible. Is that a tropical plant thing, Case?
Yeah, some tropical plants, though, do definitely still have some kind of cycle or seasonality.
Yeah.
But often, yeah, there's no reason to stop. As long as everything's good and stable, they're just going to continue go. But it's rare that any plant is doing it all the time, like gas pedal once they're 3 years old until death.
Okay.
That is not quite as common.
Wow, what a giver.
Yeah, right?
So today, Casey, there's a whole fucking industry around noni juice.
This is mind-blowing to me. This is why I'm like, how vomit worthy is this tree actually?
That's what I'm saying, you know? Case.
So I'm like, I just am not convinced that it's so reviled as the name suggests, because everything else leads me to think that everyone actually finds it to be quite a delight to ingest.
Yes. I want to express my thoughts, and I'm going to do so out loud.
Please.
And kind of as they come to me. This is the sort of dichotomy I'm dealing with when I think about this tree.
Uh-huh.
When I YouTubed this is how I research for the show. Mm-hmm. I usually do a YouTube search just to like see the stuff.
Yeah.
You YouTube noni fruit, there's countless videos of white travelers eating the noni. Everybody says this tastes like shit. We're going to try it. They take a bite and they look like they're going to throw up. They spit it out. Like, oh my God, it's disgusting. They're like trying to get it out of their mouths. Oh, this is called the vomit fruit for a reason. Do you see where I'm going with this?
I do. I think I do. Yeah.
I would have to see, I guess we would have to do the research of like where these folk names come from.
Yeah.
I mean the negative folk names, blue cheese fruit. I'm sorry, but that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I do love blue cheese, though.
I do, too. Okay, but you know how they're using it.
Exactly, yeah.
Vomit fruit. There are a few others that I can't think of off the top of my head. But
yeah, but I think I see what you're going
at. I would have to see where those come from, because if they came from the native peoples who use this fruit and respect this fruit and respect this tree and love this plant.
And it's a huge part of their culture.
Yes.
Thai people use it in food all the time. Like,
yeah.
There's whole things named after it.
Then that's great. That's what the people who kind of like own that tree call it.
Yeah.
Then good. If this was some shit made up by white people traveling to Thailand on summer break and eating this fruit and being like, this tastes like shit. I cannot believe these people
eat
this fruit and they drink the juice. Then I don't even want to go there. I don't want to even calling it the vomit fruit, which the guy did in the original video that inspired this conversation. I feel is very derogatory and should be cycled out.
I agree. I mean, I think that's the right move for a lot of different names,
yeah.
which have no derogatoriness really associated with them.
Oh, interesting.
You
okay.
know? I mean, like, we've talked about it a bunch with just trees that are, like, this pine, that fir, like the China fir, for example. It's like, yeah. well, it's not a fir. It is from China, umbrella pine. It's not, it's a pine in no way. It is an umbrella in no way. Let's just call it Kayamaki. Let's just call it whatever it is, or at least not try to mash it into a name. So sometimes that even makes me be like Indian mulberry. But yeah. Indian mulberry, like, it looks like a mulberry. It looks like a big, fat, gigantic mulberry. So I'm kind of like, okay, that's fair. Like, they're calling it very explicitly. You have to get a botanist in there to tell you, oh, no, these are not technically related.
Even the Indian mulberry was probably, and I'll say probably, I might be wrong, made that name was created by somebody who's not Indian.
Yeah, exactly. Who's an English person saying, oh, well, we have the normal mulberry, right. and then there's the Indian mulberry.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's like, this, you know, there's this thing of, like, Americans will say, or I guess maybe just, like, white European / Americans will say, this reminds me of something I know that from home.
Yes.
But I found it here in the wilds of China. I'm going to call it the China fir.
Yeah, yeah,
or,
yeah.
you know, like, I don't know. I don't like that approach. I don't want to use any of that terminology because it feels gross to
me. I 100% agree. And I think that's the whole point, that we're calling it the noni entirely.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to escape. Sometimes it's just ingrained, but because language is language and it's always doing things. But I 100% agree with you. And it always makes, like, I guess all I could encourage everyone to do is just think, like, a little bit further into a name and wonder where it came from and why. And like, I don't know, who came up with that particular name often? Yeah, because I think your observations are probably right. Now, what I'm waiting for is someone who's been like, oh, yeah, my whole family's been Polynesian for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
We hate this. The thing tastes horrible. But yes, we do use it still anyway for these reasons and that reasons. And I'm like, okay, stand corrected. There we go.
Yeah, I think there's also the white urge to, like, put other cultures on a pedestal as if, like, this fruit that probably doesn't taste great needs to be revered and respected when, like, the people who grow up around it are probably like, it tastes like shit.
Yeah, it tastes awful. Why are you guys doing that?
So there's this weird, I'm not even making a judgment or a statement. I'm just like, these are all of my associated thoughts.
This is like this cloud above you just kind of mashing and bashing into each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing is complicated. And I know, you know, we try to be as forthwith as we can about these things. But yeah, it's hard to get it right. And if you get it right in one place, you probably got it wrong in another place.
Totally.
So in this case, I think it's important to acknowledge it, no matter what name we call it, that it is an important thing to a lot of different people. And on top of that, some of those people might call it certain names.
Yeah.
And then kind of leave it at that. We're going to call it a congregate. No matter what.
Casey, that was our discussion of the noni and a few other things. It's time for our review, but first, we gotta take a little break. We will be right back with our review of the noni after these messages. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the noni. It's time for our review. Here's how it works. We're going to have some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10. Casey, I would love to do golden poems this episode.
Ooh, okay. It's our edible episode.
That's right. Golden poems of honor. Casey is our resident expert. We will begin with you.
Alex, I have thoughts on this tree.
Wow.
This is one of my favorite things that we do in our podcast because I like to talk about a tree and then take us out of that discussion. Be like, great, this tree is extremely important to a lot of people in the entire world. To me, it sucks.
Mm.
I'm not saying that about this tree, just to be clear, but sometimes it tickles me to be able to do that.
Right.
So thank you all for being here with us.
This is the opinion portion of the show.
Exactly, yeah. This tree, let's just start from high level. I think it's beautiful. I think it looks gorgeous. I love this coffee plant that is sitting next to me. I think it's quite handsome. So I think the leaves of the noni are just the same kind of handsome.
Yeah.
I don't like that they are such small trees. I want them to be bold and big. Like, I want these trees to just really get into it. Don't stay small. Be big.
Show us who you are.
Exactly. Now,
maybe it is already.
Exactly. And it's like, this is who I am. Don't try and tell me to be bigger or smaller. I hate you.
But can you imagine a noni the size of like a big southern magnolia?
Yeah. Oh, God. It would just be out of this world.
That'd be
so
sick.
It's not prepared to do that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But that means I'm not prepared to give it a high score.
Wow. So,
I got a little bit of a bone to pick with noni being not considered an invasive tree. Like, it is, like, you know, like when you walk around and you're like talking to someone and like there's two people and they talk about one person like it's a complete degenerate and they talk about the other person like they're just like a superstar.
Yeah.
And you look at them and you're like, I'm pretty sure they're both assholes. Like,
yeah.
Why are you treating them differently? Like, they're the same kind of person. Why is that one revered and that one not?
Interesting.
You know?
Well, I've got a clue.
It must be the food, you think? Is
well,
that your clue?
I think, personal opinion.
I guess, yeah. Okay.
Maybe this tree just has a good reputation and so people ignore its invasiveness.
I suppose so. Like, that's as far as I can get because everything I can read about this, except for the literal word invasive,
yeah,
this tree is an invasive tree.
Right. You're being gaslit.
Yeah, at least slightly naturalized in all these places.
Yeah.
Like, it went from one spot to pan-tropical. If we say that the tree of heaven is pan-temperate, that's gonna be, like, that's bad. So pan-tropical, it should also be bad.
I see the word pan.
It's everywhere, but it didn't start everywhere, but now it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, the mangrove is the exact opposite situation. It's always been everywhere. So we can look at the mangrove and be like, okay, mangrove, you've done it.
It's just successful.
It's just successful. Yeah. You didn't have to jump on the backs of people to get brought everywhere else and then start seeding yourself in. So I don't know. But, like, you know, apples and the same thing, like the different people who've brought things, corn moving from Mexico up to New England, you know, like all these things, people are part of the ecosystem. So I don't want to be too harsh on it for that.
Sure.
But maybe if it grew really big and beautiful, I don't know. 6.5 for me, Alex.
6.5 golden 6. Poems 5, of honor. 6.5
because you know what? It probably tastes pretty, the term I'm going to use is intense.
Yeah, I think it probably does.
Yeah.
Have a very profound flavor.
Right? And I do like the braininess of it, so I'm going to give it 6.7.
Because 6.7?
The braininess of the fruit is fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, 6.7 yes, golden yes, poems yes. of honor. We have forgotten for a third time to describe the fruit.
It looks like a grub, everyone.
It looks like a grub.
It looks like a little caterpillar that got so fat that its legs, like, popped into itself. Yet it has somewhere between 75 and 90 legs.
Yeah, it's like Violet Beauregard when she fills yes. up with blueberry juice and her arms are just
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what it looks like. A little bit elongated. They can get like 7.5 inches long. Like, they can get big.
That's wild.
Yeah, and they're very mushy looking. So
yeah. Big, fat, semi-translucent grub is what this looks like. Really, truly.
Yeah.
And you can see the seeds are dark, right? Kind of see them in there.
Yeah.
You did go up to 6.7.
I went to 6.7. I'm going to stay there because...
Stick on 6.7.
Yeah, because okay. I like what the fruit looks like.
All right, 6.7.
I've never tasted it, though, Alex.
6.7 golden poems of honor for the noni from Casey Clapp.
That's right.
Casey.
Alex, what do you think?
I appreciate a lot about this tree.
Okay, yeah.
I love a tree that gives back. You know this about me.
I do know this.
I love a medicinal tree.
I do know this.
I think it's especially kind of like, I look at a tree that cures like 90 things. And I'm like, look at you go. That's awesome. That's good for you. That's great.
Give a little rustle of the leaves.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so cool.
You also tend to like trees that do weird things. Like the perfect example I can think of is the Bradford pair.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna
You're everyone in the world's like, we can't wait for Casey and Alex to rip this tree apart. And you gave it a very high score because you're like, honestly, I love that it smells like this. So you sometimes, your view of things consistently surprises me and brings me great joy.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate that.
So don't let me down.
I think the fruit is really interesting. I think that, you know, common names and folk taxonomic names come from somewhere.
Sure.
There's truth behind those names,
there's
obviously.
Love.
They wouldn't catch on if there wasn't some truth to the way this thing tasted.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't call a strawberry vomit fruit because it does not taste like vomit.
Ah,
right?
I see. And there's no way that someone could be like, yeah, totally.
And the fruit is really interesting looking.
Mm-hmm.
This plant gives back in spades, and it doesn't ask for much back.
Altruism very high.
Extremely high. And it doesn't ask for much back, I just mean it doesn't take up a lot of space.
Mm.
It grows very competitively. It's like a nice way of saying.
It is good. Yeah, yeah.
Very political. Casey, I also learned about this native Hawaiian medicine called La'au Lapa Aus.
Okay.
And it is literally translated from Native Hawaiian to vegetation cure.
Wow.
Right?
Ah, I love that, Alex.
Yeah. And the noni fruit juice is like queen of the fucking jungle in this sphere.
Okay.
Oh, Casey, you're going to hate me.
No, I'm not, Alex.
9.0.
Wow. 9.0?
I love this fucking tree, man.
That does stun me. Hate has nothing to do with it. That is way higher than I expected.
You went way lower than I expected, I'll say that.
I guess we averaged out. Good for it. Honestly, this is the thing. This is why we do this show together, because if we didn't, then everyone would agree with me.
That's right. Yeah. Or wait. No, that was an insult.
Thanks for listening to Completely Arbitrary.
Wait a second. 9.0 Golden Poems of Honor for the Noni from Alex Croson. Casey, that was our discussion of the Noni.
What a good long discussion.
Yeah.
It went so many different places.
Long indeed. Let's do a Q&A before we call it a day, Case. What do you say?
All right, Alex, I got it pulled up right now.
Do you really?
I do.
Casey, this week, as all weeks, we got a question from the Patreon.
That's true.
You have it in front of you, so would you please read it?
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you, Alex. That's very sweet of you. Alexander Scully is our question asker this afternoon. Two-part question, says Alexander. Casey, what cones do you think make the best tree tattoo? Asking for my arm.
Ah.
I appreciate you giving your arm some agency there.
Very good.
Second, Alex, what is a song that you love that you wish you wrote?
Wow.
Any song recs?
Nice.
So, I assume the recs mean recommendations.
Probably.
And
or recreation.
Yes, I like recreation.
Jumping jacks to Beethoven's Fifth. Interesting, Case. Okay, so let's start with your portion here.
Okay, that sounds good.
Best cone for an arm tattoo.
Okay, so the best cones that I can think of, having gotten several tattooed on me, my arm specifically, I have skinny arms. I'll be the first to admit I'm not a large person. For me, the cones that I want to get have to be somewhat smaller cones. If I got a coulter pine in any way the right size, or a sugar pine or something like that.
That'd have to be a back tattoo.
Now, if I worked out and was a different person, then I might have larger arms where when you flex your arm, it would be like, boom, whoa, look at that. You got like, you know, you can put a Jeffrey pine on that thing. So I just can't do it. So I have, let's see, I have a Douglas fir and I have some cedars and a yew and some pines, a couple things. There are different sizes.
Kind of get bigger as you go up your arm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's where I work out, right?
Got a larch down here?
Yeah, I do. I got a larch, larch on the top. Got like a sprig of hemlock. And
how
these
did
kinds
I
of
ID
things.
That? What the hell?
Dude, you know what you're doing. Go look at your arm. Go look at the size of a cone and get one that is complicated, but not too complicated. Because if it's too complicated, the shadowing and the artisticness of it can kind of get lost on a tattoo. Because you can't be so perfect all the time. They kind of bleed in and out, especially as they age. So you'd want to get something, in my opinion, that is detailed, but not so intensely detailed that if you don't necessarily have that detail, you can't tell what it is.
Sure. I'd like to interject with a little caveat.
Please.
And say it's really all about the artist's style.
Yeah, that's true.
You're speaking from the perspective of an artist who deals in like really botanically accurate depictions of
Sean
these things.
Sean Hebrink, in case anyone wants
to
look at
that's up. That's your sort of type artist for this sort of thing.
Yes.
But you know, there are artists who do like artistic representations of this cone.
Yes.
You know,
see many of our cones of the month.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. If I was just to straight up give you a really good option, the Don Redwoods, a spectacular cone to get tattooed.
That's great.
It's beautiful. It's simple. Everything about it is a delight and it's gorgeous. So that would be my first one. The second one, which I haven't got, so I'm not actually going to, this would be unique, is the China Fir, Cunninghamia lanceolata.
Wow, yeah.
I think those cones are so cool. And
very
like,
cool.
So beautiful. So that, I think those would be two that are detailed enough, but also kind of unique enough that they would be very interesting.
Yeah, that sounds great, Case. Good Rex.
Hey, thanks, Alex. Now, Alex, there's the second part. What song that you love do you wish that you wrote?
Okay, so I become really obsessed with a song, and then I listen to it 100 times until I get sick of it, and then I just never listen to it again.
Wow.
But I'm like soaking in every aspect. Every time I listen to it, I'm like studying a different part of it or something. Ooh. You know, like I want to really listen to the drums. Like, I like that drum sound.
What is he doing here?
Yeah.
Okay, what's the bassist playing right now?
What compressors on that vocal? I'm deep listening.
You're
analyzing. Yes.
Okay.
So that's why I listen to a song a million times. And that's why I've seen Arrested Development 30 times.
Oh my God.
Start to finish.
Analyzed.
So recently I've got two songs that I am fucking obsessed with.
Okay.
And that's Thinking of Nina by Marlon Williams.
Mm.
It's a great groove, Case.
Yeah, it is.
The other one is I Fall Into Her Arms by Mo Troper. It's just got a great chord progression.
Yeah.
I know that I really love a song when I'm like, ooh, I want to steal that part,
a song
of mine.
Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
That's right. I know that I really like a song when I hear like, it could be anything, like a drum beat. I'm like, I want to write a song with that drum beat.
Yeah.
Like it inspires me to write a song. And this Mo Troper song, I Fall Into Her Arms, is very,
excellent.
Very much that.
All right. I think those are two great options.
Yeah. Go listen to those songs.
Go listen to them and then put them on repeat, analyze them, write your own songs. About
yeah.
them. Excellent.
While you're at it, listen to Alex Croson's new EP, Sorry I Missed You.
Analyze that, listen to it, and then decide why it's your favorite album.
Yeah, go throw a few bucks to me on my Bandcamp. Thank you so much to
Alexander Scully
for this question.
Good question.
If you have a question for us, join us on the Patreon at $3 a month. You can be in the Q&A tier. We are in the process of recording our almost like a quarterly Q&A episode for the Patreon where we answer 50 plus questions. And then you might get your question on a mainline episode like Alexander here. Above that is the $5 tier, the Arboretum, where you can get two bonus episodes a month. And you get 15% off of our merch store at all times, as long as you're subscribed.
That's right.
Above that, this is kind of our crown tier.
It really is.
The Cone of the Month Club.
It's the jewel.
The Cone of the Month Club. For $10 a month, you can get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist, sent to you in your physical mailbox in a physical envelope, licked by Casey Clapp's physical tongue. Hey, there's that first clip for our OnlyFans, Case. It's really fun. It's really cute. It is an impeccable way to support this podcast, and it gets you real physical rewards every month. You can form your own little cone collection, just like Casey Clapp. Above that, of course, is Arbitrary Plus, our live stream service. You get two live streams a month, one from Casey and I about a host of topics. Interact with us in the chat. It's a lot of fun. And one from me playing a tree or nature themed video game. It's like a little Twitch night. I'm like a little fake Twitch streamer, Case.
Yeah, you are. You really good job.
Above that, our $20 premier tier makes me nervous even talking about it. It's generous admission. Starts at $20. You can give us whatever you want a month. It is just that above and beyond way to support this podcast. We use every dollar goes back into the show. That's patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You know, consider joining. Go there and see if there's something for you. And if you like what you see and are curious, join for a month and see how you like it and go from there.
Exactly right. Make decisions. Cancel any time.
That's right.
No contracts.
Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson. What a delicious topic today.
Of course, you know, I very much want to try a noni fruit. Would you eat a noni fruit, Casey?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm kind of one of those people. Well, I guess I shouldn't say all the time, but I do. I am like, yeah, I'll try that.
Yeah.
There's some things that I'm like, I just really don't want to.
Sure.
Sometimes my mood isn't there.
Yeah. I'm there with uni.
Yeah.
Do you like uni?
I have no idea what uni is.
It's a sea spine. What do you call it?
Oh, an urchin.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Huh. You eat the little jelly in the middle, Case.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah, I'd try that. Put a little chutney on a piece of bread or something. Yeah, all good.
Uni chutney. So bougie. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll be back next week. See you later.
Au revoir. Completely Arbitrary is hosted and produced by Casey Clapp and Alex Croson.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
You can find additional readings on our website. That's arbitrarypod.com. You can follow along on Instagram at arbitrarypod.
And to support the podcast and get bonus content every month, visit patreon.com/arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod pod.
Thanks for listening.
All views and opinions expressed by Arbitrary Media are those of Casey Clapp and Alex Croson and do not represent the views of any affiliated organizations or persons.